He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
To infinity and beyond!
No crying! There's no crying in baseball!
My precious!
Good morning, Vietnam!
Your milkshake!
This is Sparta!
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Welcome to Know Your Cinema.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema podcast. This is season 2, episode 26, and today we are reviewing Harlem Nights. This is a film that my co-host, Jason Quinn has not seen. Jason, say hello to everyone.
Hello, hello, hello.
That's all right.
Hello's there.
It's all right. All right. So this isn't a movie a lot of people know about or have seen that I've, you know, ran across in my time here. But to kind of give everybody kind of like a backstory on the movie, this movie was written, starred, and was directed by Eddie Murphy. And it stars some comedic legends, Richard Pryor, Red Fox, Eddie Murphy, of course. It also has Della Reese in it. Pretty good all-star cast, but really the plot of the movie is during the 1930s, a New York City illegal gambling house owner and his associates must deal with strong competition, gangsters, and corrupt cops in order to stay in business. Sugar Ray is the owner of the illegal casino who contends with the pressures of vicious gangsters and corrupt policemen who want to see him go out of business. In a world of organized crime and police corruption in the 1930s, any dastardly trick is fair. So, Jason, this was a movie you have not seen. Give us your thoughts on the first time watching this film.
First off, I was definitely kind of caught off guard by the fact that there's definitely a more serious plot than what I expected of it.
Yeah.
I expected a very, very much just a comedy, but there's there's a very dramatic plot.
Yes.
To go along with this. So that kind of caught me off guard to really, really right off the bat, because one of the opening scenes is this little boy who grows up to be Eddie Murphy's character, I presume. I don't think that they...
Yes. Yeah, that's who it is. It's quick.
So he goes into the club back when it's just a little disheveled kind of hole in the wall kind of place, and fight erupts, and then he ends up shooting somebody in the head. And I was just like, whoa, like right off the bat, I was like, holy shit, this is a different movie than what I expected. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, you got Richard Pryor and Red Fox sitting there around the table and they're cracking jokes and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, this is what I'm expecting. I'm expecting that I'm about to get, you know, just a whole lot of, you know, ball busting and shit like that. But then, boom, there's a bullet hole in the middle of some dude's forehead. So it definitely caught me off guard. One thing that I really would have wished that I would have gotten more of personally in this movie is Red Fox, because I think he was very underutilized in this movie. He was, you know, around every once in a while, but I think he's so fucking funny. Just any scene that he's in, he has just such a comedy aura about him that you just can't help but like. Even just some of the way he delivers lines that probably wouldn't be funny out of anybody else's mouth, he just has it, you know what I mean? The man just gets it.
Red Fox is a comedy legend. He's a sitcom legend as well. This was his last film prior to his death, so this is, you know, it doesn't matter if you watch him back in the 70s and you watch him in this film, he has it. Like, he's just a funny guy. Like, Red Fox's delivery is just funny, how his persona is in it. And I understand what you're saying. I mean, I wish I would have got a little bit more Red Fox in this movie too, but I understand the character they wrote for him. You know, he's right. He's the grizzled old man that they keep around because they trust him, you know, and he's good for a real good laugh from time to time in this film. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying that the movie plot would have been much better with him in it more, but he's just so damn funny that I wish that I'd have got more. One thing that keeps, so one of the hardest fucking things for me for some fucking reason is simply because I'm a Buckeyes fan, and there's Richard Pryor and Terrell Pryor, right?
Right.
For some fucking reason, I say Terrell Pryor. I've said Terrell Pryor a whole lot more in my life recently than I've said Richard Pryor.
Right.
And so every fucking time I have wanted to say his name, I have almost called him Terrell Pryor. And I'm like, no, that's not fucking Terrell Pryor. That was, I don't know why that shit just popped into my, like, it's been the hard, like, so if I call him Terrell Pryor throughout this fucking thing, then you'll know why I did that. But
being a Buckeyes fan, Terrell Pryor is kind of like a, we don't really talk about Terrell Pryor around here anymore.
No, we don't, but I've said his name a whole lot more than I've said Richard Pryor recently. So that's the reason why.
I understand. I completely understand. I get it. I almost called Della Reese Vera. I mean, that is her character, but I couldn't think of her name for a second.
Makes sense. She's funny as hell in this movie too.
Yeah.
She's great in every scene that she's in.
Yeah.
She just, the attitude that she carries, that the character carries is phenomenal. Just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. She's the her and Red Fox are almost the same character. They're just bitter old people who are just like, I'm tired of this. I ain't putting up with anybody's shit.
Yeah, but it's funny. I mean, it's funny and it works really well. But I mean, I don't know. The storyline's pretty good. It's definitely, I mean, it's a solid little gangster flick, to be honest. I think they did a really good job with like the sets and like the kind of world that they built around it. It looked really good. I think. I don't think that there's anybody whose acting is, at least in the main cast, that is anything other than, you know, really great.
Right.
But it's, I don't know. It's a pretty decently solid flick. I definitely think that it's something that it was funny this time going through it, but I think that it's something that I'll catch more of the humor the second go. And it's definitely, because there's a lot of the stuff in there that I feel like probably would have been funnier if I'd have known what I was getting, you know, like if I'd have been expecting some of the stuff.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, because the movie, you know, it is a serious film. It's not, you know, it's not like a goofy movie. It's supposed to be funny in parts and give you little flashes of hilarity. So it's not, you're trying to pay attention to the story, which is great. I mean, that's what makes the film work really well, because you do catch the comedy stuff. And I've seen this movie, you know, 5 or 6 times in my life, and accidentally, you know, fell into it when I was a kid and didn't really get any of the humor and stuff. And watching it again this time, I saw a scene where I was dying laughing. I didn't even realize it until, you know, I was watching it again. Like, that's some funny, like, just basic comedy, but it was so hilarious. And it was the scene where Arsenio Hall's character, they'd cornered Quick in that flower store, and they were shooting them and they got three of them got Tommy guns, and this other guy beside him has got this little six shooter, and he's like, stop shooting that motherfucker.
No. Oh, that shit had me dying. That shit was funny as hell.
But yeah, watching it before, I'd never really caught on to that humor portion of that scene. And that's what a lot of these scenes do. Like, they have seriousness to them, but they also have a little bit of funny as well that goes on. And there's a lot of scenes in the movie too that have they're real serious, and there is no funny parts to them. So, and you gotta listen for them. So, like, there's a scene, you know, I was telling you yesterday, there's a serious scene where they're all sitting in the living room talking about what they're gonna do, and Red Fox keeps calling Vera a fat bitch. And then the birds that he has in his house behind him go, ah, fat bitch.
Yeah, fat bitch. I did. You had mentioned to pay attention to the birds during that scene, and it hadn't come up before I watched it. And so I did get to catch it during this first watch through, and that shit was funny as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this movie 5 or 6 times, and that's the first time I ever noticed. I thought watching it, I'm like, someone messed the audio up in post. I thought there was an echo in the audio, and then I was listening again. I rewound it and was like, okay, that's the birds, because clearly you can see them over his shoulder in that scene. They're not too noticeable if you're not paying attention. But it was just like, that's the subtle hilarity that was thrown in there. Yeah. I do want to talk about some of the acting in this. I think that I thought Richard Pryor did a really great job of acting in this movie. It was a kind of a serious role that he was thrust into. And he's known normally for a lot of his comedic roles, not a lot of seriousness to what he does. And I thought that he did a really, really good job as far as his serious acting. I mean, there was comedy in there, yes, but being the quintessential, you know, I don't really want to say main character, because technically Quick and him were both like the top main characters, but he was one of them. And I thought that he did a really good job of acting in this film, because it really does focus on Quick and him. It doesn't really focus on the latter characters that we've mentioned.
Right.
But keep going, man. Keep talking about it. You know, tell me about that fight scene with Della Reese and with Eddie Murphy. I know you'd seen it. I know you'd seen a clip of it before, but that scene fucking kills me every time.
Yeah, I think I don't know if you showed me this before or after we started the podcast, but I know you showed me the scene.
Yes.
But I don't know if when in the timeline of our friendship you had shown me the scene. It's better in context. I'll definitely give you that much, because it was funny when you showed it to me, but it's 100% better when you understand why the fight's about to take place.
Yes.
And I don't know, man. It's super funny because it's her attitude in the whole fight. Like, cause she's dead ass. Like, I'm about to fuck you up, Quick. And like, he thinks it's so fucking funny the whole time. And so that kind of back and forth thing is super fucking funny. And the whole movie's even kind of has this underlying, like, she wants to beat the fuck out of Quick. But then there's a scene in the end of the movie where he apologizes for shooting her in the toe or whatever. And then she says, well, why don't you go take your sorry ass into the living room or whatever. And she gets kind of choked up and says that she loves him or whatever, just to herself, you know?
Right. And she got a persona to uphold.
Right. And it's, I don't know, that to me, that part of it, that last little part, like the apology, which comes right after the scene that we were talking about with the birds, that little part of it makes it better. Like, it makes the whole scene a lot better, and like their relationship a whole lot better.
Right.
It gives a whole lot more to it. Honestly, that was probably one of the scenes that I appreciated most in the movie. Was like that kind of coming full circle, because I was like, all right, you know, because they could have just as easily been like, ah, whatever, we, you know, it was a thing that happened, and it didn't necessarily need to be a loose end. It was just a thing that happened, you know.
Yeah, no, that fight scene is one of the funniest scenes in any comedy I've ever seen. Like, and it's a long scene, but like you said, the context of why it happened, the story that's built up just for that fight scene is funny, and it's kind of minuscule, but it kind of illustrates things that happen internally within that business. Like, you know, Quick's trying to, you know, help run the business, and he's like, oh, you know, the only people that come up short is the girls. Vera's character is the madam of the speakeasy, She's just like, she's like, oh, you're calling me a thief and a liar. She's like, nah, he's trying to, you know, they're trying to calm her down. He's like, no. She starts taking out her damn hairpiece, and she's like, all right, bring your ass outside. And then he's blowing her off like, nah, she ain't gonna do nothing. And she goes out there, takes her shoes off, and he's standing there. She just punches him in the face. And he's like, what the hell is wrong with you? And she's like, nothing's wrong with me.
Right.
It's just funny, like, and then she whoops his ass, like,
oh yeah, she fucks him up.
And then he hits her with a trash can, and she's like, oh, you want to hit me with trash cans now? Now I gotta cut you.
Now I gotta cut you.
And then he pulls.
So you want to hit people with trash cans?
And then the end of the scene, like, after he shoots her in the foot, he shoots her pinky toe off. They're walking out, and Red Fox is like, Vera whooped your ass. He's like, shut up, man. She'd still be whooping your ass if you had shot her in the foot. Like, it's just it's the ball busting that you get there, Red Fox. Like, his, like, delivery is just so good. Like, you know. Wise old man's like, nah, you shouldn't go out there. Because even when he was going out, he's like, you're fucking with a heavyweight, quick.
Oh, she fucked him up too.
Yeah, it is for those who have not seen it. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about watching this movie, it is a good movie. It is not gonna win Oscars or anything like that, but it's a good story. It's got, you know, great characters. It's got comedy in it. Like Jason said, this has great world building in it as well. And I assume a lot of those were sets, you know, wherever they had filmed this, but they still were able to grasp that feel of the 1930s, the cars and the clothes and how people dressed. And it was, you know, a different time. And you look at it and you feel that it is spot on how everything looks. So this movie has a lot going for it, and there's storylines within storylines kind of going on here, and everything's kind of being encapsulated. And there's a couple of villains in it, so I guess you could say. So, you know, there's one main villain, and then there's like a, I want to call him a sub villain. So Danny Aiello plays the cop, the crooked cop, Phil Cantone. And Michael Lerner plays Bugsy Calhoun, and Bugsy Calhoun's like the main boss.
He's less intimidating though.
Yeah, because he seems like he has a heart at times. Like when Vera comes and sees him, like he seems like he has a little bit more of a heart. But Phil Cantone, he's a little bit more ruthless in his approach, but he's kind of subtle in everything he does. Like never really loses his temper, but that one time, but kind of, you know, kind of plays it cool, but is also like a real big fucking jerk.
I honestly, so when he first, when the guy that was like the bag man or whatever, that was getting seduced by the one girl or whatever.
Yeah. The one mobster guy.
I thought that the first couple of times that I saw him, I'm like, is that the cop? Is that the same fucking guy? Like, I thought that they were the same fucking dude. To me, they look a lot alike. But I don't know. They that scene with the one guy that's like the bag man, he decides to call his wife and say he ain't ever coming home again. That shit caught me off guard. Like, that's what this movie does best, is it delivers on catching you off guard, because a lot of this plot is so serious. When it has an instance of comedy, you're not expecting it, because it'll be like a whole lot of serious shit right before that. Like some dude will get shot in the head and you're like, oh, whatever. Like that's a heavy thing. And then it'll be like a super funny line, like, you know, right a little bit afterwards. But yeah, that line right there where he says like, hey, honey, can you put your mom on the phone? Hi, I ain't never coming home again.
Yeah, there's even the scene with like the boxing champion, when he, you know, because he's been hit so much in the head, like he just knows how to box, like it's instinctively like to box. Mm-hmm. But he's got like it almost feels like a little bit of like Mike Tyson back in the day. And like he has a speech impediment because of being, you know, punched in the head multiple times. And in the 30s, I mean, they weren't, you know, the most health conscious when it comes to like head injuries back then. Not like now, concussions are like the, you know, the thing that they really look at. And back then, you know, as long as you could stand, you could box. But it's like some of those scenes are just funny with him too, where they're like, "Hey, champ, how you doing?" He's like, "I'm doing good. And he's trying to get the words out. And they're just kind of like, "Oh, okay, like, all right, champ, enjoy your time." So it's a really good movie. I mean, I love it. I can go back to it. I can watch it. And not get bored. That's the thing about that movie, is like I won't get bored. I always laugh. It's always great to go and see those great comedians. Like, I love Richard Pryor. I know Richard was Eddie's idol, and I probably, you know, you assume that Richard was, or that Red Fox was Richard's idol. So, or at least one of his influences. And it's awesome to see that cast. Like, you won't get to see stuff like that anymore. You won't get to put greatness like that on screen. And even, like I said, even because we don't have a lot of Red Fox in the movie, it still has that great feel to it. I don't know if that's how you felt, but that's how I always feel when I watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does have like I love the relationship that the four of them have. Like, there's like a good, solid, like, close-knit relationship. Yeah. And I really feel like the relationship isn't just what's on screen. It feels like there's a lot of like respect for all of the four of them for what they're all doing in the world of comedy as well.
Right.
And what they've already accomplished.
Right.
It feels like a lot of that respect that's on screen is really the way they actually respect each other off screen.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get from it. It feels authentic.
Yeah. Like, you have to give credit to, you know, Eddie Murphy. You know, he wrote, directed, and acted in this movie. That's a hard thing to do sometimes, and making it your vision being interpreted on screen. Especially when you're having to act and direct at the same time. You know, it's different when you wrote it and you're directing it. You're not having to remember lines or anything like that. So that is hard. I know Kevin Smith's done it for years.
But only in small parts for the most
part. Right, in small parts. Yeah, Eddie Murphy is listed as the main list on this film. He's the top act on the credits. So, you know, I have to give some credit where credit's due to Eddie Murphy. And I love Eddie Murphy in the 80s and early 90s, like gold, just at gold. He was just hitting on all cylinders, everything he was putting out, from his stand up to the films he was doing. Just phenomenal. And, you know, this is, again, a testament to what he was able to do and write that type of comedy into this. It's like, you know, I referred to it earlier about the scene with Arsenio Hall. Like, the entire scene, Arsenio Hall is crying. And his character's name is listed as the crying man. And,
bro, Arsenio Hall was on one in this movie. He was funny as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has one of the shortest parts in the movie, but it's so good. That scene, it was almost a throwaway scene, but also was kind of a necessity. But at the same time, like, it was so good. Like, that scene was just so funny. And I, this is the first time, like, I just caught on to the humor of it, because I was, analyzing the movie itself and trying to look at different things. And just that guy firing that pistol and Arsenio getting mad at him was just,
stop shooting that motherfucker. Clip, and then he'd fire like one or two bullets.
Pow, pow. It's like, God, every time they'd fire on me, he's like, pow, pow.
Yeah. It was so fucking funny. Yeah, it shouldn't be funny that all it is gunshots, but like, even before he speaks up, I'm laughing because it's so fucking funny.
Right. Because it's the slapstick of, these guys have Tommy guns. You could just sit back and let them shoot Tommy guns. and you got this little fucking six shooter, and you're like, I'm getting mine in, pa-pa. And he's getting mad at him for helping out. That's the other funny part about it. He's like, at least he's like got his gun out, and he's trying to shoot this dude. Like, stop shooting that little motherfucker.
So good, and it's not even like, and that guy's just there, like he's like, he's really just an extra that's firing that six shooter, so he's not like the main part of it, but like, oh man, it's so fucking funny.
Yeah it is a really, really good movie, and if anybody's gonna watch this film, you go into it just with a clean slate and then just enjoy it for what it is, and you might find things funny in the movie that I don't find funny or Jason finds funny, like the scene where Benny's, you know, running the crap table, and the whole time he's like giving the wrong numbers and people are losing their shit. And he's like, Benny, I need you to put your glasses on. He's like, oh man, come on. I'll put them on. He's like, do it for me. And he puts them on. And he looks like he's got two Coke bottles on the end of his face.
Oh, there's some thick ass glass.
He goes back and he's like, he's got his head up in the air. And he's like, all right.
No, I mean, they were as it looked like they used all of the glass from Young Guns and made them into glasses for him.
Yeah. If you don't know that joke, go back and listen to our Young Guns episode in the archives. One of the first episodes we ever did. You'll understand that joke. Or if you know, if you're privy to Young Guns at all, then you understand why we were saying. Using all the glass in Young Guns. But let's move on to favorite scenes. So my favorite scene, of course, is the fight scene with Vera and Eddie Murphy's character, Quick. It's classic piece of cinema to me. Like, you can take that and you can just have anybody watch it and they're going to laugh. I don't care. If you don't laugh, there's something wrong with you. It is so funny. It is so well directed. It's just written well. Like, Eddie, hats off to Eddie for having that type of dialogue put in there. And being able for the two actors to pull it off the way they did, because it's phenomenal. So that's my favorite scene. What about you, Jason?
Honestly, I think that scene's phenomenal, and I wouldn't disagree with your choice there. But that scene with Arsenio Hall and where he's screaming at it with the Tommy gun, I lost my shit laughing at that fucking scene. Like, I couldn't keep it together, and I think it's partially been because I'd already seen the fight with Vera, so it was funny to me. But I'd already seen it. But the other scene, oh man, I fucking lost it, dude. I was laughing the whole way through. And then when he spoke up and said, stop shooting that little motherfucker, I laughed even harder. Like, it just skyrocketed even more. So that's my favorite fucking scene in the movie.
Awesome.
Although a side note scene is when the club gets busted up, and it's a very little subtle thing. The club gets busted up, and then the cop guy looks over at the band and tells them to play a song for them to get arrested to. And the conductor of the band's like, motherfucker, like, he's all pissed about it. that shit had me dying too.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Like I said, subtleties in this movie, man, just like it's flashes of laughter where you're just side splitting. What is your favorite quote in this film?
My favorite quote, I don't know why it's my favorite quote, but I found it super funny, was when Vera goes to meet with Bugsy and she says, I'm an honest hoe and all my hoes is honest hoes. I don't know why I laughed so fucking hard at that, because I mean, I knew she was in on the thing, but like, I just, it was like the whole delivery of it in that scene was so funny to me. So that's my favorite quote in the movie.
That's pretty good. That's a good one. Mine is right before Vera goes out to fight Quick, and she's like, Benny's trying to calm her down, and which is Red Fox's character, and she's like, you shut the fuck up, Benny. I would tell you to kiss my ass, but knowing you probably can't find them, you blind motherfucker. And then, of course, Red Fox follows it up with, fuck you, bitch. Which is basically like, conceding, like, shit, I am blind.
That is like that, yeah. That if you're ever in a verbal argument like that, like where you're just talking shit to one to another person,
yeah,
and the other person comes back with "fuck you," you won.
Yeah,
that.
I love like, why that's so funny. It feels like a real conversation, and then like Benny is just, you know, he's the bitter old man who you know, he's the bitter old man who, you know, doesn't you know, he's not able to like do a lot of things anymore and realizes that he's going blind, so he, you know, he has to have, you know, has to have that little comeback on her, and he's just like, fuck you, bitch.
You're right. It is good though.
It's super fun. It's super fun. Favorite performance?
Is it Della Reese? Is that her name?
Yes, Della Reese. Yes, that's who plays Vera.
That's, I think she's every scene she's in is phenomenal. Her attitude in this whole movie is phenomenal. She was my favorite character to see on screen. So I got to give it to Della Reese.
All right. I'm going to give it to Richard Pryor. I think that he did a phenomenal job in this movie, you know, because it was kind of a serious role, but also, you know, he got to throw a little bit of comedy in there. If I had to throw a second in there just because he was just being Red Fox, I think that Red Fox would be, just because he had very little lines, but I thought that he was... The ones he did was just great. And even Arsenio Hall, for that tiny little scene that he was in, was fucking hilarious as well.
Yeah, it caught me off guard. I'm like, is that Arsenio Hall? Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Jason, what would you say that your favorite, or not favorite, excuse me, what was your rating of this film?
I'm going to give it an 8. I think it's a good movie. I think I could see it going up to maybe an 8.5.
Yeah.
On a second viewing.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm right there with you with the 8. I have a couple, you know, problems with the film. The pacing of the film is a little quick sometimes, pardon the pun. There are some scenes that are kind of throwaway scenes that are unnecessary as well. I get that they're, you know, they're part of the story, but we really don't need it. You know, the whole scene with Sunshine and the cop, you know, you really don't need that scene, as far as like in the hotel room and him quote falling in love unquote with her. So, you know, I don't really think that's a necessity. That's just a couple of things. And I think that other than that, you know, acting's great. Storytelling is great. And, you know, the world building is awesome in this movie. And, you know, you're just not going to have this type of comedy cast again. It's just not going to happen. So it's an 8, and for me, it anyways.
Yeah, I think it deserves the 8. I think you're right. There's definitely some scenes in this movie that could easily have been cut. Mm-hmm. They could have cut some of the scenes like that and put in more, you know, Red Fox, and that would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Red Fox. Well, you want to move on to segment 2, sir?
Let's do it.
All right, folks, stay with us here for segment 2 of Know Your Cinema Podcast, the Get to Know Your Cinema Podcast section of our show. We'll be right back after these short messages from us here at Know Your Cinema Podcast and Anchor.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening and supporting Know Your Cinema Podcast. If you like what you hear in this episode, please check out our vast library of over 60 episodes covering a wide variety of films from comedy, action, horror, and everything in between. You can listen to the show on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcast. Also, check out our social media platforms for fan polls and interaction with all the hosts of Know Your Cinema Podcast. Give us a like at Facebook at Know Your Cinema Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at KYC Podcast. And now, without any further ado, back to the show.
Hello, and welcome back to segment two of Know Your Cinema Podcast, the Get to Know Your Cinema section of the podcast. And today we have a question from Mr. Devlin.
Yes, and we are also going to be playing Vaguely Name That Movie. But first, the question of this week's episode is, so Jason, if you could now not necessarily remake this film in particular, but if you could assemble four comedians, three males, one female, just like this cast, to be portrayed in a movie, whatever would be written, who would you put in there?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because we talked about how good this cast was comedically, and how something like this would probably never be achieved because of the legacy that all of them have left. Like, even though you don't think of Della Reese as like a comedic, you know, actor, she still delivers in that kind of realm. Because if you would ask most people, they'd probably remember her from like Touched by an Angel, which is kind of odd, but that's like the thing she's known for.
Yeah. This is a tough one. It's tough because there's three male actors that I'd love to see work together. And okay. Then I have two female actresses that I think are my favorite female actresses when it comes to comedy.
Okay.
And so I'm having a hard time figuring out which one would fit best in that group.
Okay. All right.
So the three comedians that I would love to see work together are Will Ferrell, Jack Black, and Jim Carrey. I think that
it's pretty good.
That would be, for me, that would be like, I'd fucking back the project. You know what I mean? Like, there'd be right. No way. So I would love to see that. And then I love Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I find them both to be super funny. Okay. I think that I would probably put Tina Fey in that group.
Okay.
Simply because he's the one that I find the funniest out of the two of them. But I could see Amy Poehler being just as solid in there. I mean, I don't know. There's it's tough because there's a couple of female comedians out there that are super funny. Like Chelsea Peretti, I think, is super fucking funny. But she's, I don't know.
99, right?
Yeah. She's so fucking funny. And I also think Maya Rudolph's funny. And I could see, I mean, Maya Rudolph and Will Ferrell have done some stuff together, and they work really well together. So I could see a lot of it. I could see it working on multiple fronts, but I'm having a hard time picking which female comedian to put in there. But I'm gonna put Tina Fey simply because I think she's probably my favorite.
I got you. Okay. So you said what? Will Ferrell, Jack Black, and
Jim Carrey.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, like I said, you're not remaking this movie. This is just, I'm saying, if you could do an ensemble cast to write a movie around. So, I mean, with female comedians, there's a couple that, like, really, like, get my funny bone. The first one, what the heck is her name? I can't think of it off the top of my head. Hold on a second. I'm going to look her up. And you can see her face. I just can't think, say her name. Let's see. Gonna be a second. I had to remember something she was on.
Another solid female for this cast would be, for the cast that I brought up, would be Betty White. I could see her rushing it.
If we were redoing Harlem Nights, I would cast Tiffany Haddish in the role of Vera.
I don't think Tiffany Haddish is funny,
but for that particular role, I think that, like I said, we're not rehashing this. We're not remaking. We've done that a million times on the questions like that. So yeah. I'm saying, like, so if I had a couple of
females, I would put Leslie Jones instead of Tiffany Haddish.
Okay. I mean, you could even throw in Wanda Sykes in there. I mean, wanted to.
I feel like Wanda Sykes was really, really funny in her early career, but I feel like she's not as funny in her later, like, more current career.
I got you. So Aubrey Plaza is the one I was thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, she's super funny.
Yeah. Her, and then there's another one. I think it might be the same chick we were talking about from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Chelsea Peretti is fucking hilarious.
Chelsea Peretti, yeah. I think that would have been my other choice for the female role. The male role is a little harder because I appreciate so many, like, comedians, and it's hard for me just to pick one, and let alone three. So I am with you on Jack Black. I think that his comedy hasn't even, like, gotten to scratch the surface of what he can do being unleashed, like, comedy wise. Because if anybody's listening and you go to Jack Black's, like, TikTok, Jack Black has just got, like, the fucking, like, the one of the best TikToks out there, because he's just doing the most crazy shit. Like, but it's also entertaining and innovative and funny. Like, he keeps it, and it's PG, but it's still fucking funny.
Tell that he understands comedy on just such a fundamental level.
Yeah. I think yours is spot on. I think Jack Black is phenomenal. I think Will Ferrell is phenomenal. And Jim Carrey hasn't done a pure comedy in a long time. But I think that he is his spectrum of characters and impressions and movements and things that he does is so good. And it's probably because, you know, we all grew up with him in the 90s, and he was the hottest thing since sliced bread. So, I mean, he is phenomenal. He is one of those classic, like, we talk about Richard Pryor. He's kind of up there on that level for us, where Richard Pryor was for a generation prior to us.
Yeah. No, he's a bit of an icon at this point, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've mentioned before on the podcast, the man had three number one movies in a year. No one has ever, comedy movies, no one has ever done that, ever.
But, and I mean, I don't know if you've seen, I'm sure you haven't, but they released a Sonic the Hedgehog movie this past year.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No, I have not. I'm not allowed to watch movies.
So I assume that you hadn't seen it. So it's Jim Carrey's in that movie. What is, you usually it's you watch a new movie. So Jim Carrey's in that movie, and honestly, the movie overall, I've seen it probably 25 times. It's pretty decent, but Jim Carrey really brings a whole like flavor to the movie that if it didn't have him, it wouldn't be in as, anywhere near as good.
Well, you know, when you're casting a pseudo live action film with a cartoon crossover, you have to have flesh and blood characters. You want someone who can play a character role, and who else are you going to go get to play that role than one of the greatest character actors of all time? Jim Carrey has played some of the best character actors or characters of all time in film. Like, when I say character, I mean that it's something that's like over the top. Like, you think about like the character of The Mask. Like, that's an over the top character. Ace Ventura is an over the top character. Mm-hmm. So he understands how to play characters because
he's a living cartoon.
Yeah. Well, I also say that a lot of it was because of being on In Living Color and having to play those, because he played a lot of iconic characters. If you ask someone to name like your top three characters from In Living Color, somewhere in there you're going to find a Jim Carrey character. You're going to probably find Fire Marshal Bill, you know, other characters that he played. But that, because that's the one that stands out for me. You're also probably going to get like, you know, Homie the Clown, which is one of the more iconic characters of that show. But again, Jim Carrey coming from that type of show, having to play different characters, that's what molded him to be a great comedic actor, because he got thrust into character type roles and he made them work. I won't take anything away from him at all. Like, again, his serious work, I haven't seen a lot of it because I don't want it to ruin my thought of him as a comedic actor, but at the same time, I understand actors have to broaden their horizons. You know, it's like, you know, not to compare Jonah Hill with Jim Carrey, but Jonah Hill was kind of typecast into like the fat sidekick and the comedic relief as the fat guy sidekick in all the films he's ever been in, and accepted he was that guy. And, what's that?
I love Accepted.
Yeah, it's a good movie. And what's the other movie that he was in? Where he was like super bad, he's fat sidekick. Even 21 Jump Street, he's kind of like he's in better shape, but he's, you can still tell like he's still a fat kid. But then, you know, he goes and does like Wolf of Wall Street and, you know, Moneyball. He's an Academy Award nominated actor now. So you have to expand your resume as an actor. And I understand Jim was just going out and trying things and taking roles that he wanted to take, and hats off to him. That's what you're supposed to do. I just, you know, I will always remember Jim Carrey as a comedic actor, no matter how many serious roles he does. He will always be that guy that made me laugh as a kid. Cause he was, you know, he was big when I was still in my, you know, still as a child, when I was 5 or 6 years old, he was still, a comedic, you know, actor, and he was still just starting off. You know, Ace Ventura came out in, I think, 93 or 94, and I was like 11. So I was still able to enjoy that for what it was. So, like I said, he's an icon. You know, he's up there with like Richard Pryor and Robin Williams. He's up there, because he's been able to do that. And Robin Williams did the same exact thing with his acting, where he started going out and doing more serious roles and branching out. But we all love Robin Williams for a variety of different things. You know, some people like him for Mork and Mindy. Some people like him for Mrs. Doubtfire. Some people like him for Hook. I mean, a variety of different things that he went out and did.
Apparently I am a huge Jonah Hill mark. I just went through his like IMDb and shit, and I'm like, man, I've seen like fucking almost all of his fucking movies.
It's like, no, it's, I get it. It's like, it's like Danny McBride and Seth Rogen, like that whole group of guys. Like, I'm a mark for their work. I really am. Like, I start thinking about it, I'm like, I really am. Like, I love a lot of Seth Rogen's work. Not saying that everything he's been in has been funny, but and sometimes it's the people around him that are hilarious. But I'm a huge mark for it. I mean, Jonah Hill's in Grandma's Boy. He's in
Grandma's Boy is, in my opinion, one of the top five best underrated comedies of all time.
I didn't even like it the first time I watched it.
I fucking love that movie with all of my heart.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that movie now and quote it a lot. But when I first watched it, I don't know if I was not in the right mind frame for it or I had been drinking or something, but I did not find it funny the first time I watched it. Second time I watched it, I was stone cold sober and enjoyed the shit out of it. I don't know why I thought that was odd, but it's one of those movies that made me change my mind.
That still goes down in history as one of my favorite. It's probably one of my favorite comedy movies, period. But like, it's definitely one that I would say a good portion of people have never fucking heard of and need to watch because it's so fucking funny.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. We need to review Grandma's Boy. We can bring Dante loves that movie, so we can bring Dante on too. With comedy, I think you hit the nail on the head with the comedic actors. Because Will Ferrell, if we're going to break this down, Will Ferrell he has changed the comedy game in the last 20 years. And he keeps evolving and trying different things. He's done some like really bad B movie type comedies as well. But he's also hit home runs with, you know, Anchorman. And there's even some of the ones that people really don't care for, like Semi-Pro. I love Semi-Pro. I think Semi-Pro is funny as hell. And Step Brothers. Step Brothers is one of those ones that is super revered. And his partnership with John C. Reilly and how they mesh, like an Abbott and Costello. Like that's how, when I think of those two, I think of like an Abbott and Costello because they complement themselves so each other so well. And I'm a huge fan of vaudeville comedy and old school comedy. Like if you ever watch Abbott and Costello, it has that same feel to it. And Abbott and Costello, you can go YouTube, some of that stuff still holds up. Just like the Three Stooges still holds up. Who was the third one you said? You said Jack Black, Will Ferrell. And we talked about Jim Carrey. So yeah, again, Will Ferrell, I think he understands that where his bread is buttered. He gets it. He understands it. And even some of the other, like the latter stuff that he's done, like Daddy's Home and the other guys, like you wouldn't think like him and Mark Wahlberg would have such good chemistry, but they make it work. And it's awesome.
Yeah, it is him and both of them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't think they would have that type of chemistry. You'd think they would be kind of off, but it really does work because I think that especially in the other guys, when you find out about the character's past as the pimp in college, and you're like, and Mark Wahlberg's like, "This is your wife?" He's like, "Who's it? Who is this?" And he's like, "No, this is my wife." He's like, "No, seriously, who is this girl?" Mm. Like, and then like if you go and watch some of like their behind the scenes stuff where like they're promoting the movies and they're doing like bad dad jokes, or like there's a YouTube video there where they're sitting down, they're insulting each other. And like they're basically just playing like a game of like your mama, only it's like, you know, with them. He's like Will Ferrell said, like, "Mark, you're so old that when you were little, rainbows were in black and white."
Will Ferrell's even good in. Have you ever seen Stranger Than Fiction?
I have not. I have not seen Stranger Than Fiction.
A lot of comedic actors that I like, I've also seen a lot of their serious stuff too, and I really enjoy it. That might make an appearance on the thing, but I think he's even good in that. I think he just nails it. But again, I'm a huge, all three of those actors. Like if I find out Will Ferrell, Jack Black, or Jim Carrey are in any movie, you can bet that I'm gonna watch that.
Well, you haven't watched Dead Man Walking yet, which has Jack Black, and it's a little bit more of a serious role for him.
No, you're right. I haven't seen that. But I'm at least interested.
Right. Right on. Okay. Well, I think that the question, we've answered that pretty well today. You know, if anybody out there gets a chance to hit us up on social media, tell us who you would think that you would put in a movie with your, you know, three male comedians and one female comedian. You know, give us a shout out and give us some feedback on that. But moving on, we're going to play a little game that we like to do here called Vaguely Name That Movie. So usually do 3 to 5 movies, maybe get a couple laughs in there for how we describe the movie. So Jason, you got any movies this week that you want to vaguely describe? I've been thinking about one all week, man. It was murdering me. Pardon the
okay. pun. How about two guys constantly try to figure out what is love?
Okay, that's pretty vague. Two guys try to figure out what is it again? Try to figure out what?
What is love?
Oh, Night at the Roxbury. Okay. All right. Four teens kill the Gordon's fisherman and cover it up. And
I Know What You Did Last Summer. Just the Gordon's fisherman.
Yeah, that was like, I was like, oh, it's so good. Like the other day I was like laying in bed getting ready to get up, and I was like, I don't know why they popped them in. I'm like, oh, I gotta come up with some movies for the podcast. And I'm like, what you did last summer? Four teens kill the Gordon's fish and try to cover it up.
Two guys invent a game involving oversized balls.
Basketball? If you should, what you should have said was two guys invent a game. One drinks the fat of liposuction out of Marlon Brando's ass.
The movie is so fucking like off the chain.
Yeah. Well, you know. Those guys took a huge risk. They haven't made a movie since. They took other than the South Park movie, but they we got all this money from Comedy Central. Let's do a movie, and let's just make the most ridiculous shit of all time. Well, then they did Orgasmo too. I don't know if you've ever seen that as well.
I haven't, but I got a friend of mine who thinks that movie is top notch.
It's way crazier than Basketball.
I have a friend of mine who, anytime somebody comes, Jehovah's Witnesses come to their door, they ask if they've ever seen Orgasmo, and then at great length try to describe the plot of the movie to them.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Gets his stapler stolen and sets a building on fire.
Office Space.
Yes.
Matthew Broderick fights a disappointing lizard.
Matthew Broderick fights a disappointing lizard. What the fuck?
Give up.
I do give up.
The 1998 Godzilla.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Movie sucked.
Yeah. I just had a movie too, and I'm like, now you made me lose my train of thought. Damn it. Hold on. can't think of it now.
Gun shy?
Not gun shy. I had it and I was getting ready to type it in when you asked me the question. So now I'm like fuck. Let me just find another one here real quick. Oh, I got it. Dane Cook tries to bang a girl with big ears.
It's employee of the month.
It is.
Every Dane Cook movie.
And it's sad.
Man.
That's
the superpower I have.
Okay.
Man, this is such a great movie. I don't know how to badly describe it. I can't badly describe this movie. I'm like, man, it's just right there. It's just so good. I can't figure out how to do it. Okay. Man is burned alive and then sees a clown. Spends time with a clown.
Man is burned alive and then sees a clown.
Yeah.
You're pretty good on your vague descriptions.
Yeah, I mean, it's very vague.
It is super vague.
Clown eats mayonnaise, I believe, also.
What's that?
Clown eats mayonnaise.
Oh, my God. I have no clue. What is it?
Spawn.
Oh, it's been years since I've seen Spawn. Like, years. Like, a long time.
I really like that movie.
John Leguizamo is the main villain in that movie.
It catches you so off guard that John Leguizamo is that clown.
John Leguizamo has been the villain in a lot of things that you're like, what?
His range is not talked about as much as it should be, because that guy has got some fucking range.
He does. I've seen everything like him in Drag to him in that Spawn movie.
Yeah, I mean, and he's in he's an Ant-Man, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
And he's fucking one of the best parts of that whole fucking movie, too.
Okay. A group of high school students.
No, it's Michael Pena that's in there.
Oh, okay.
Michael Pena is fantastic in that movie.
Gotcha. All right. A group of high school students seeks revenge on a sleazy nightclub owner and his redneck sheriff brother.
Okay, group of high school students.
Yep.
Seek revenge on a sleazy nightclub owner and his redneck sheriff.
I don't even know if you've seen this movie. I think you have.
You got a year on that one?
1981.
Ooh.
I think I asked you about it though, and you'd seen it, but I might be wrong.
I have no idea.
It's Porky's.
I have seen Porky's. It's been I saw Porky's one time, like I think in seventh grade.
Right.
So it's been like a really long fucking time.
Yeah. I go about like I got like 10-year periods where I watch Porky's. Like, I don't know why.
So the movie that I was trying to vaguely describe that I couldn't figure out how to do it was The Fifth Element, because that movie's an absolute masterpiece, and anybody that disagrees is crazy. And I couldn't figure out how to vaguely describe that, because I'm like, man, it's just like fucking. I'm like trying to figure out a way to describe like Gary Oldman and Chris Tucker.
You would have just said Debo's the president.
It was just, I forgot that he was in that movie.
Yeah.
But it's just, I that was like one of my favorite movies when I was growing up. We randomly had that shit for some reason.
No, that's a good movie. It's an awesome movie. Let's see here. You got another film?
Let's do one more.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Youngest member of a family wins several cars. Creepy uncle eats colored flop.
Okay, say it again.
Youngest member of the family wins several cars while the creepy uncle eats colored flop.
Colored slop?
Yeah, slop, like pudding like substances.
Several cars. I don't know.
Maybe he's not a creepy uncle, but he's just like, he's bizarre. He's off.
I got you. I'm not catching anything here.
I can't think of any other ways to describe this one. It's Vegas Vacation.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. I was trying to like, I was like, I can't think of any other things to say about this movie that aren't going to give it away.
Right. You could have said he wins them gambling or whatever. That would have might have helped a little bit.
Maybe.
High school student treats his best friend like crap and tries to avoid his principal.
Ain't that the facts about this fucking movie? Ain't that the real truth about Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes.
Ferris is an asshole.
Yes. I think we did that on the episode, so we did talk about that. How much of an asshole Ferris is.
He's such a dick. All right. Vivin was so caught off guard. He was like, what? And we're like, nah, dude, he's a douche.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he is. He really is. All right. Jason, do you have the wheel ready, sir?
I certainly might.
Certainly might.
Yeah. Okay. I have it right here. Let's see if it's ready. It is ready.
Okay. So, for those of you who might be joining in for the first time, the way we choose movies around here is we place them on a game show style wheel and we spin the wheel, and Jason has 5 movies on the wheel. I have 5 movies on the wheel, and Jason, so it's my turn to add a movie to your side of the wheel. So I need to double check, though. Have you ever seen Smokey and the Bandit?
I have not.
Okay. So we are going to add Smokey and the Bandit to Jason's side of the wheel.
All right.
And so for Jason's side of the wheel, let me go over the movies real quick. We have Top Gun, Machete, JFK, Phantasm, and now we've added Smokey and the Bandit. On my side of the wheel, we have...
That is Phantasm 2.
I'm sorry, Phantasm 2. My apologies. Phantasm 2. On my side of the wheel, we have Moana, Gridiron Gang, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, and Trolls. I think there might be missing one more. No, one, two, three.
Sharknado.
Sharknado. I didn't write that down. Sharknado.
You like open, I forgot.
No, I mean, I'm going to shit all over that movie anyway, so...
I'm looking forward to that discussion.
But without any further ado, Mr. Quinn, will you spin that wheel, sir? For some reason, the audio never picks up the actual wheel spinning. I don't know why. What do we got, sir?
We have got a... Gridiron Gang is what we're watching.
Okay. Gridiron Gang.
Very excited.
I'm interested to watch this movie too. Although I'm not a fan of Exhibit, so it's already got a strike against it.
You love Exhibit, don't you lie?
I love Exhibit getting his ass whooped by Eminem in 8 Mile in the rap battle.
Wait till you see Exhibit is a coach.
I've seen the trailer for this film, but I'm looking forward to watching it. Love feel good movies. I assume that this is a feel good movie. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that. But before we get out of here for the night, we want to let everybody know that there is another bonus episode of Know Your Cinema Podcast coming up on Thursday. Jason, would you like to let the fine folks know what we are watching for that bonus episode?
We are watching Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3.
And that is a continuation down the Marvel universe, cinematic universe, until we get to the very end of the films. Because
which will never happen.
Which will never happen. No, it's because I have not watched all of them, and I've put them like bits and pieces them together as far as that goes. I did get to see the trailer for the new Suicide Squad movie this week.
A little Starro action.
Yeah, it's fantastic though. So
it does look fantastic. The scene, I fucking laughed so hard about the scene with the dicks on the beach.
Yeah, it's super good. Anybody's listening to this, go do yourself a favor and look up the Red Band trailer for the Suicide Squad film. It's quite hilarious. So I am looking forward. This could be, we just reviewed the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. And, you know, we said that it was probably the best film that DC put out in a while. This probably could top it.
It definitely has potential. There's a couple other films that I know Devlin hasn't seen that I want to throw out, that I'm going to throw out on the list, that I think are very comparable movies. Particularly, honestly, the movie that would be the prequel to this one would be the Birds of Prey movie. And I think that one's actually really fucking good.
Well, Jason, do you have anything else for our fine folks here listening to Know Your Cinema?
No, I think that's it. I look forward to you coming back and listening to us talk about Iron Man 3 and then Gridiron Gang next Tuesday.
Yes. But before we go, folks, we do like to leave you with a few of our favorite sayings. Mine is from my best friend. He used to say something when the Minnesota Twins would be losing a baseball game. He would look at me and say something to the terms of all is right in the world today. And today, folks, for you guys, all is right in the world.
And mine is a movie quote from one of my favorite movies. And that quote is, never take life too seriously because you'll never make it out alive.
All right, folks. Thursday, we got Iron Man 3, and then next Tuesday, Gridiron Gang. We will see you later.